Hugh Bennett for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next hour, I will be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. The headline today on the Triangle Business Journal is Liquid Assets. ABC boards in charge of North Carolina's alcohol sales are getting bigger with members holding more control. But what about oversight? Our top story this week is How the Money Flows. ABC boards control millions with minimal oversight. The writer of this story is Laura Brummett. Resale prices float in the thousands for just one bottle of Pappy Van Winkle bourbon, some blends setting consumers back some $10,000. In North Carolina, a bottle of the specialty bourbon retails for around $300, but only a select few are allowed to purchase the high-demand liquor each year. That allocation, along with nearly all major decisions relating to alcohol, is left up to the state's 168 local alcoholic beverage control boards. Broken down by county or municipality, each ABC board can choose whether bottles of Pappy Van Winkle go to preferred customers, winners of a lottery drawing, or straight to the shelf. These non-elected officials, ranging from 2 to 6 individuals per board, run the local ABC boards how they see fit. Their powers include distributing millions in public dollars, opening new ABC retail locations, and choosing which liquor brands to sell in stores. For bars and restaurants, the boards act as a supplier for all liquor through its monopolized ordering system. It's the same system that was created in 1937 to end prohibition in North Carolina. Leaving power up to the individual boards meant towns or counties could decide amongst their residents whether or not to sell liquor and in what capacity. Now, 86 years later, the Wake County ABC system is a $224 million business, and some, like Raleigh bar owner Amanda LaRoque, feel the system is unfair, allowing for special treatment and lacking oversight. We're their customer, and they don't care about us, she says. The system is so broken. It's a good old boy system. Others want to see the state switch to a privatized system, as seen in 33 other states, making liquor more accessible to consumers. Of the 17 states that have a controlled alcohol system, North Carolina is the only one that has local boards running individual systems instead of keeping control at the state level. An ABC omnibus bill gained traction in the legislature this year, giving hope to many who want to see updates to the ABC system. But the bill's provisions allowing ABC stores to be open on Sundays and happy hour discounts caused problems with some legislators, ultimately coming to a screeching halt. While the modernization debate trudges on, millions of dollars continue to flow through local boards. Unlike the boards of public companies, where industry and business expertise is necessary, ABC board members come from a variety of backgrounds, often not related to alcohol or retail. The Triangle's two largest ABC systems, Wake County and Durham County, both have the county commissioners appoint their 5-person boards. Each member serves a 3-year term, and no limit exists on the number of terms a board member can serve. In Wake County, 3 board members are in their 3rd term. That includes Willie Rowe, who is the board's chairman and sheriff of Wake County. Other members include Betty Whitaker, Lucius Jones, Joel Keith, and Ike Wheeler. In Durham, the board chair is Daniel Edwards, a retired captain in the Durham Police Department, executive life coach, and owner of the Moorhead Manor Bed and Breakfast. Gail Adland, Donald Lebkis, Frischel Scott, and Ryan Urquhart round out the board. The boards meet once a month to discuss sales, marketing plans, alcohol law enforcement actions, and new or existing store opportunities. Board chairs in both Durham and Wake earn $500 per meeting, and the others earn $400. While board members handle overarching decisions, day-to-day operations are led by the general manager. Wake County General Manager Brian Hicks, who has a salary of $191,000, oversees 26 stores, a warehouse, and the system's 300 employees. He also plays a role in distributing the $6 million in grant money each year. The C in ABC stands for control, Hicks says. We want to make sure we continue to provide customer service, but that we don't have an ABC store on every corner. Or other states have issues like higher DWIs and higher substance abuse when they have a privatized system. Hicks spent several years as the assistant general manager and served under Wheeler, current board member and former general manager, before being appointed in 2021. Keith, another current board member, served as the general manager before Wheeler. Hicks earlier spent 20 years with the town of Rollsville, including serving as the town manager from 2010 until 2017. Betty Whitaker, a member of the Wake ABC board since 2015, also spent several years working for Rollsville on its board of commissioners. She was on the board when it appointed Hicks as the town manager in 2010. In Durham County, the board hired Lou Sordell as general manager in 2021, despite having no prior background or connection to any board members. Sordell says he went through an extensive interview process conducted by a third-party company before being appointed by the board. Sordell had spent his career working in management positions for hotels, most recently as the general manager of the Hampton Inn and Suites in Briar Creek. "This was kind of a shot in the dark for me. During COVID, I was sitting in an empty hotel with only four guests, and I was debating what the future of my career should look like," he says. "I came across this position online and I applied. I started the interview process, and it took about 3 to 4 months from the beginning to the end of the interview process." Money flows in. For an average 750 milliliter bottle purchased at an ABC store, the local board pockets 22% of the retail price. That's $5.05 for every standard bottle of Tito's Handmade Vodka sold. The $22.95 bottle is the most popular liquor sold across the state, including Wake and Durham counties. That profit breakdown is set by North Carolina law, including 53% of the average bottle price going to the distiller and 24% going to state excise taxes. On top of retail sales, ABC systems profit from the sale of liquor to mixed beverage license holders, such as bars and restaurants. For Wake County, that meant $224.14 million in total revenue for the fiscal year ending in June. That puts the system in the same tier as some of the Triangle's largest privately held companies. The recession-proof product mix combined with low competition positions ABC stores to do well. Wake County ABC saw a 13.5% net profit margin last year, a high ratio for a brick-and-mortar retailer. Wake County ranks second in the state for the highest level of gross retail sales, behind only Mecklenburg County, home to Charlotte. Durham County's ABC system ranks number six. Durham County's net profit margin of 11.86% also points to a healthy level of business. The system saw $62.23 million in revenue last year. But instead of pumping those profits back into the business as a private company might do, ABC boards give a percentage of their revenue to the state, local municipalities, and selected nonprofits through a grant program. High revenue systems such as Wake County have a larger stack of funds to dole out, meaning higher stake decisions for the board members, says Carol Shaw of the Distillers Association of North Carolina. "This is where you see the board come into play, particularly in Wake County," she says. "A lot of money is generated by the ABC system that can be invested into the community. The board makes the decision on where a lot of that money goes, and it's a significant one. We're talking millions of dollars." The state requires 5% of a system's profit to be given to the education, research, or treatment of alcohol and substance abuse. Nonprofits and law enforcement agencies are eligible for the funds to be used toward programs and services and can apply annually through the grant system. In Wake County, $6.5 million was given last year toward the causes. In Durham County, that number was $1.05 million. The largest beneficiary in Wake County was the county-owned behavioral health facility, Wake Brook Behavioral Health Facility, which was run by UNC Health until September 30th and is now run by RI International. The facility received $1.5 million, according to journal records obtained by the Triangle Business Journal. ABC systems also hand out a chunk of their profits to cities, towns, and counties. Municipal distributions are based on the county tax assessor's valuation. Durham County received $2.6 million from its ABC system last year, with the city of Durham receiving $287,000. Wake County's ABC split its $6.35 million in distributions among about 14 municipalities, with Raleigh and Cary receiving the most. Wake County received $10.57 million. Confusing system. Ordering liquor on Wake ABC's online system means bars and restaurants are browsing through 524 pages of individual bottle listings. for restocking known necessities like Tito's vodka, using the search function to find the brand can help narrow the hunt. But newly added items or specialty liquors can get lost in the mix. Raleigh's LaRoque, co-owner of The Goat Bar, stumbled across three such specialty bottles during her normal ordering process one day in April. Mitchter's 25, Mitchter's 20, and Mitchter's Celebration Sour Mash were all listed as in stock, all of which retail for over $1,000 for one 750-milliliter bottle. LaRoque placed an order for one bottle of the Celebration Sour Mash Blend, a $6,000 order, and received a confirmation email. That $6,000 bottle could turn into 20 shots for customers priced at over $400 each. On the resale market, the bottle is being sold for over $20,000, making any bar who has one on their shelf a top attraction for bourbon fanatics. But the next day, LaRoque's order had been deleted from the ABC website. She thought the bottle might have been pulled by the ABC system to enter it into a lottery, the system's usual approach to allocating specialty liquors for bar and restaurant owners. Instead, the allocation had been decided before the bottles even made it to the ABC warehouse. LaRoque and her husband, Brandon, found out about that through an email thread with ABC's mixed beverage coordinator, Channy Pearson. "We did get this in and were requested by Chatham Imports and RNDC, before it was even shipped, to sell it to a specific on-premise account," an email from Pearson said. The bars that received the bottles were Watson Ward, Dram and Draft, and Stanbury, according to Pearson's email. LaRoque tried to track down which entity could provide oversight on the situation and found herself in a cycle of email threads. No one wanted to take accountability. Wake County said the higher-ups did it, so I went to the higher-ups of the North Carolina ABC Commission. The ABC Commission said alcohol law enforcement overlooks the ABC, she says. ALE said we don't have any restrictions on this. After feeling like she'd been on a wild goose chase, LaRoque stopped trying to ask questions. "It's a free-for-all system. Everybody can do what they want. There's no transparency and there's no accountability," she says. Hicks, the general manager of the Wake ABC system, says the incident happened at the request of the distillery. The distillery asked the ABC system to ensure those bottles went to its list of top bars, and Hicks says he obliged. "The Goat Bar was not pleased with that, and I understand that frustration. We have a lot of bars here in Wake County that fight for their business like no other," he says. "It's a competitive business, and we respect them. We do our best to make sure it's as transparent as possible." LaRoque and her husband opened The Goat, located at 5111 Western Boulevard, 20 years ago. "The couple has had issues with the system for years," she says. "It's not a logical system. They're not business people. It's the government," LaRoque says. "So you're dealing with your right hand not knowing what your left hand is doing." Olivia Gray, the general manager overseeing West End Wine Bar and West End Billiards in Durham, says landing specialty liquors is more trouble than it's worth. Durham ABC's online ordering system is nearly identical to Wake's, leading Gray to run into problems similar to LaRoque. "When an order for a bottle of liquor is placed by a bar or restaurant, the listing for that bottle is not updated to reflect the new availability amount. If Gray sees that the website says four bottles of Tito's are available, she can place an order for four bottles and receive an order confirmation, but that doesn't guarantee that there will be four bottles available when she goes to pick up her order. For example, in an order placed September 25th, Gray didn't receive two bottles of Jose Cuervo and five bottles of Corralejo Reposado tequila that had shown up as in stock. No rush to change. Shaw of the Distillers Association of North Carolina has been arguing to modernize the ABC system for years, beginning with the 2008 report at the behest of the North Carolina legislature. Shaw has dedicated years to analyzing the ABC system's profitability distribution of power and efficiency of laws. In 2008, her position in the program Valuation Division of the General Assembly led her to create a report titled "North Carolina's Alcohol Beverage Control System is Outdated and Needs Modernization." The report states the system has not kept pace with demographic and economic changes, and state statutes limit effective management of the system. The mission of local ABC boards is not clearly defined, and some boards use the lack of a clear mission to justify ineffective and inefficient store operations. The lack of state oversight causes performance to vary considerably across local boards, according to financial data in Shaw's report. State statutes limit the ability of the North Carolina ABC Commission to effectively and efficiently manage the ABC system, the report says. The ABC Commission does not have the authority to enforce minimum standards for operations and profitability. No changes were made when the report was published. That report made a lot of recommendations. The legislature did nothing, Shaw says. But about a year later, there were a bunch of corruption scandals at ABC boards, and they picked our report back up and actually passed most of it. The 2010 changes included stronger rules on nepotism and defining the role of board general managers. The introduction of the ABC omnibus bill this year had the promise of making big changes to North Carolina's relationship with alcohol. The bill had early support from bar and restaurant owners, including Shaw's organization, but met pushback from some legislators. It features over two dozen provisions, including one aimed at making the allocation of specialty liquor bottles fair. That section of the bill calls for each local board to receive state commission approval for how it allocates the bottles to retail customers. The boards would then have to include a list of the customers who got to purchase the liquor in their monthly sales records. The bill is now stuck at a dead end, though some legislators are trying to get different provisions through in other vehicles. For now, Shaw is continuing to help members of the Distillers Association find new avenues of revenue so they're not so dependent on the ABC system, she says. Back in 2019, Shaw did a 10-year update revisiting her past recommendations, and the legislature asked her to look into privatizing the system. But she says, I didn't make any specific recommendations because how we operate our ABC system in North Carolina is ultimately a political decision. You just have to decide what direction you want to go in. Let's turn now to the biz section. This is written by Dane Huffman. The first one is Hall of Fame Redskins legend speaks to seniors. And this has already passed, but residents of the Cardinal at North Hills got a treat October 19th when Joe Theismann, the former quarterback for the Washington Redskins, was a guest speaker. Theismann spoke to the group about the challenges that come with change. He led Washington to victory over the Miami Dolphins in Super Bowl XVIII. The Rialto returns with a fresh look. A Raleigh landmark has the lights back on and fresh hopes for the holiday season and beyond. The Rialto, with the new ownership group led by Raleigh native Hayes Permar, will feature a fresh mix of offerings with a heavy focus on music. Bill Peebles revived the Rialto, an entertainment venue since 1942, and expanded to other locations until closing it when he retired in August 2022. Permar sees live entertainment led by music and comedy as a way to re-engage the space, especially in a challenging era for the film industry. So the Rialto will feature a variety of options, from a sold-out Mountain Goats show November 25th to the Durham Symphony on December 15th, and even the Embers performing on December 23rd. Permar says he has benefited greatly from people who want to help, including David Rose at Deep South Entertainment and Zach Johnson of the Cardinal Talent Group. One day he hit me up and he's like, here's 10 bands I've got, Permar says of Johnson. The Rialto's return has thrilled a loyal audience, with Permar joking, everybody comes in happy and they say, I love what you've done to the place, and we haven't done anything. All we had to do was open the doors to make people happy again. But he has painted the building blue and added a splashy new logo. Still, he's starting small, even running the projector himself for a showing of Hocus Pocus and staying until 3 a.m. for the popular return of the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Permar realizes he has plenty to learn, from how to manage musical acts to finding a formula that supports his staff, his rent, and himself while putting on performances smoothly. I'm still scared in a lot of ways, he says. I'm trying to avoid setting myself up for disaster. Cary is adding a new way to work out. A fancy new way to work out is coming to Cary. OHM Fitness is bringing electronic body suits to the Triangle with a new studio in Cary. The fitness concept offers small group classes with training programs that utilize electro-muscle stimulation. The location in the Bradford Shops Retail Center will be the first in North Carolina. Local franchisees Luis and Liz Arcos signed a 5-year lease for the 1,775-square-foot space near Publix. The studio is expected to open in February. The Arcos plan to open two other OHM fitnesses in the Triangle. OHM Fitness was founded by Doug Payne, a former aviation electronics engineer for the U.S. Navy and Boeing. He designed wearable bodysuits that combine proprietary software and sensors to deliver 85 muscle contractions per second. That can turn a 2.5-hour workout into just 25 minutes, he says. North Hills Refresh comes into view. The ambitious remake of the North Hills Main District is becoming clearer as Kane Realty Corp. continues construction work. The One North Hills office building is all but complete and rises in imposing style over the Beltline. The 10-story building next to the Renaissance Hotel features 266,000 square feet of Class A office space and a 6,000 square foot terrace on the second level that overlooks an outdoor plaza with lounge area. Next door, work is advancing on a 5-story creative office building and a 12-story residential building called Highland North Hills, where Kane expects the first residents to be able to move in the middle of next year. The building will have 287 units, studios, and 1-, 2-, and 3-bedroom apartments, plus high-end amenities and ground floor retail, including an updated Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. Pinehurst adds more USGA events. Things keep looking up for Pinehurst, Moore County, and the rest of the Sandhills as the region booms. As Pinehurst Resort prepares to host the 2024 U.S. Open Championship in June, the golf destination is adding more high-caliber events to its lineup. The United States Golf Association says Pinehurst will host 6 additional championship events under the USGA banner, on top of several U.S. Opens over the coming decades. These events include the 2027 U.S. Women's Amateur, 2032 U.S. Junior Amateur and U.S. Girls Junior Championships, the 2038 U.S. Amateur Championship, the 2044 U.S. Women's Amateur, and a future U.S. Adaptive Open. And finally, NC Innovation to add board members. After carving out $500 million in the most recent state budget for the nonprofit NC Innovation, lawmakers are adding to the group's board of directors. Senator Bill Rabin filed a bill October 25th that includes multiple nominees for the board, such as Art Pope, CEO of Variety Wholesalers and member of the UNC System Board of Governors. Other appointees from Wake County include Beth Friedrich, policy advisor for House Speaker Tim Moore, Todd Casper, and Blanny Miller. Outside of Wake, the bill names Benjamin P. Teague of Henderson County, Jeffrey B. Turner of Lenoir County, and J. Canty Alexander of Watauga County. The duration of the board positions varies, with some lasting through September 2025, and others through September 2027. NC Innovation is designed to help schools in the UNC system commercialize their research. Let's turn to banking and aviation. This set of articles was written by Lauren Onosorge. Pinnacle CEO looks to lure rival bankers. Pinnacle Financial Partners is looking to pull employees away from big banks in the Raleigh market. Pinnacle CEO Terry Turner says that part of his bullishness rests in the markets where Pinnacle operates, including Raleigh, where he pledged to keep recruiting bankers. If you can position your bank in large, high-growth markets, you're likely to become a large, high-growth bank, Turner says. I love to highlight that we're in Raleigh. Pinnacle, which is headquartered in Nashville, Tennessee, has a history of hiring bankers away from legacy leaders such as Wells Fargo, and that can only continue amid industry turmoil, Turner says. The firm added 29 revenue producers during the third quarter, and Turner has asked market leaders across the footprint to try to capitalize on market vulnerabilities as other banks tighten. There's so much vulnerability in your market, that's really what we're sort of built to seize on, he says of Raleigh, and we are continuing to hire people at a pretty rapid pace in that market. Multiple banks have tightened their headcounts in recent months, particularly in commercial real estate and mortgages. At Charlotte-based Truist, streamlining has happened in several markets, including in Raleigh. The bank wouldn't disclose details about its Raleigh footprint, a spokesman says, noting Truist is hiring in some areas and right-sizing in others through natural attrition and planned staffing reductions. Wells Fargo has cut about 5% of its overall workforce this year, a reduction that came after it disclosed a strategic shift away from the mortgage business in January. Headcount at Bank of America dropped nearly 2% this year, though as CNBC reports, it has hired 12,000 people as well. Turner says Pinnacle, which entered the triangle with its buyout of Bank of North Carolina, sees significant opportunity in the churn. RDU adds car-sharing service Turo. Looking for a new way to get home from Raleigh-Durham International Airport? Travelers have a new option in the form of car-sharing app Turo. That's T-U-R-O. The Raleigh-Durham Airport Authority Board recently entered into an agreement with Turo, Inc., a peer-to-peer vehicle-sharing company that will allow it to operate at RDU. A briefing memo compared Turo to Airbnb, only with cars instead of homes. It's an online platform already used at airports such as Charlotte Douglas International that allows for vehicle-sharing transactions between personal vehicle owners and consumers. Under its deal with RDU, Turo will be allowed to operate in the airport parking facilities. In exchange, Turo users will pay parking fees, and the company will pay RDU 10% of its gross receipts linked to rentals at the airport. And speaking of RDU, RDU terminal expansion could hit $400 million. Plans for expanding Terminal 2 at Raleigh-Durham International Airport are getting costly, to the tune of $400 million. Over the past year, airport officials have been working to plan and design what a future landside expansion of Terminal 2 might look like. Landside refers to the area that includes the terminal curbside, as well as ticketing, baggage claim, and post-security steps and escalators. It also includes Federal Inspection Services facilities, concessions, administration and transportation security administration areas, loading dock, and consideration of future technology, according to documents provided to the Raleigh-Durham Airport Authority. New baggage carousels and additional space and ticketing are part of the plan, as is another security checkpoint. Turning now to On Healthcare and Higher Education, this set of articles is written by Zach Ezone. AgTech may slash all 123 employees. An agriculture-focused biotech in Research Triangle Park could lay off all its employees due to a difficult funding environment that's been hammering the life sciences industry. AgBiome informed the North Carolina Department of Commerce on October 17th of its plans to potentially terminate its 123 employees at its operations on TW Alexander Drive. The company began notifying employees of the termination on October 16th. They become effective on December 15th. The company's notice filed with the state does not cite a reason for the decision other than saying AgBiome has developed plans to lay off potentially all of its employees. The company, led by CEO Scott Uckness and Eric Ward, anticipate these changes will be permanent. In a statement, AgBiome said it is struggling to raise capital in an extremely challenging VC and private equity market. The company plans to continue producing, marketing, and selling its products for the foreseeable future, AgBiome said. AgBiome was founded in 2012 and uses its microbial discovery platform and technology to develop crop protection products. The company in 2017 received approval from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency for its first product, a fungicide called Howler. The agency approved AgBiome's second product, a fungicide called Thea, in 2022. We're confident that Howler and Thea will continue to be critical biological solutions that growers will depend on to safely grow their crops for many years to come, AgBiome said. AgBiome says its business is doing better than it ever has. In addition to the two commercial products, the company, through its discovery platform, has developed a rich pipeline, and partnerships include, inside and outside our core crop protection business. But despite the progress it's over the past 10 years, AgBiome is struggling to secure the funding to continue its operations. It previously closed on successful fundraising rounds. Since 2013, AgBiome has raised $230 million from investors, with the latest raise being $116 million Series D round that closed in 2021. The company said it is continuing to speak with potential partners and investors, but amid this difficult financial environment, the company has given its employees an opportunity to find new work. In other layoff news, Align Technology layoffs hit Morrisville. Align Technology, a multi-billion dollar global company with hundreds of employees in the Triangle, is laying off a large portion of its local workforce. Align, a medical device company headquartered in Tempe, Arizona, began informing employees in October about job cuts as it looks to reduce operating expenses. The company behind the Invisalign dental brand has its Americas region headquarters on Slater Road in Morrisville. Align has about 700 workers in Morrisville and had more than 20,000 worldwide at the end of 2022. About 60 local jobs are being eliminated in this round of layoffs, with another round expected later this year, according to sources close to the company. Also, at least four local executive positions from a leadership team of about a dozen are moving to Switzerland. The company-wide total for cuts is up to 200. Novo Nordisk may expand its Durham operations. A global pharmaceutical company could pursue a major expansion of its manufacturing facility in Durham. Novo Nordisk has filed new paperwork with the Durham City County Planning Department for a project that could see the drug company grow the size of its existing facility from 188,250 square feet to 312,249 square feet. The documents state that the proposed project includes a building expansion and associated infrastructure at 5235 International Drive off Old Oxford Road, about 20 minutes north of downtown Durham. But despite filing site plans in Durham, Novo Nordisk says it has not yet made a decision on a potential expansion at the site. The On Retail and Restaurants section is written by Laura Brummett. Raleigh Shopping Center sold for $15.7 million. A once bustling shopping center in Raleigh has been sold following years of decline. The Falls Center Retail Plaza, located at 4500 Falls of Neuse Road, has new owners and the potential for new development. Steinmart once anchored the 110,000-square-foot center, but the retailer closed all its stores after filing for bankruptcy in 2020. The anchor space is now filled by Spirit Halloween during the fall season. Other tenants include Office Depot, Anytime Fitness, Joanne Fabric and Crafts, and Bernie's Sweets and more. Fairway Investments, a commercial real estate firm out of Birmingham, Alabama, paid $15.7 million for the shopping center and its 10.75 acres. Sterling Organization of West Palm Beach, Florida, purchased the center for $10.85 million in 2004. In August, a sketch plan review was filed with the City of Raleigh to allow for the demolition of some buildings and new construction of others. The plan proposes a new retail anchor space, renovations to parking, and the potential for multifamily development to be added. The plan is under review. In 2022, the city approved a rezoning request to allow up to 250 residential units. The rezoning also removed the square footage limit for a potential grocery tenant. Officials with Fairway Investments couldn't be reached for comment. Falls Center was built in 1993, according to Wake County property records. The property has a total assessed value of $13.28 million. The Dreamville Music Festival will return to Dix Park in 2024. Dreamville Festival, which attracted 100,000 fans in 2023, will be back at Raleigh's Dix Park on April 6th to 7th. The two-day music festival attracted international attention this year with its lineup of star artists, including Usher, Drake, and North Carolina native J. Cole. The 2023 event sold out both days, with people hailing from all U.S. states and more than 20 countries. Tickets for next year's festival will be on sale soon, the Dreamville team says. The 2024 lineup has not been announced. This year's festival generated an estimated $8 million in direct economic impact in the Triangle area. Next year will mark the festival's fourth year. The festival is one of the largest artist-run festivals in the country. J. Cole, a Fayetteville native and Raleigh resident, named the festival after his music label, Dreamville Records. A project fills up with shops and restaurants in Wendell. Wendell Falls, a major mixed-use project, has a steady list of newly opened retail tenants, with more coming soon. The project's initial phase of retail space, dubbed Tree Light Square, is nearing completion with a second phase in the planning stages. Tree Light Square is anchored by a Publix and other national names such as Starbucks and McDonald's. Additional parcels are still available, with others already sold and in the planning stages, according to Brookfield Properties. A second phase of retail development called The Collective is being planned for an area of to the north of Tree Light Square. And finally, in construction, GC firm picks Raleigh. McGough or McGow, I'm not sure which, M-C-G-O-U-G-H, a nationally ranked general contractor and construction management firm, has picked Raleigh for its newest office. The office, located on Hillsborough Street, will serve as the firm's southeastern U.S. headquarters. McGough is a family-owned company based in St. Paul, Minnesota. The firm plans to hire 40 people in Raleigh. Writer Ben Tobin tells us about Greater Triangle Growth. In Lenoir County, luxury jet service gets NC budget boost. Fly Exclusive, the fast-growing charter jet service based in Kinston, is expanding thanks to major funding from the state legislature. The North Carolina Global Transpark, where the company is based, has a $30 million earmark in the new state budget to build a five-story headquarters and pilot training center. The Global Transpark is a 2,500-acre industrial and airport site in Kinston, housed under the North Carolina Department of Transportation. Fly Exclusive says its headquarters will include up to five flight simulators to help train and certify pilots. Those simulators will occupy 10,000 square feet across three stories and five bays. The facility also will include 14,000 square feet of classrooms and training space, a rooftop terrace, and a 22,000 square foot air operations center. Jim Seagrave, founder and CEO of Fly Exclusive, says the latest investment will bring hundreds of jobs and millions of dollars to the state and community we love. I am often asked why we chose Kinston for our headquarters, Seagrave says. First, we're perfectly positioned geographically within a short flight from some of the busiest private aviation destinations in the country. Second, we're able to recruit talent from the many nearby military bases to build careers in this great community. Third, we received enormous support from the Kinston community, the Global Transpark, and the state of North Carolina. President Tommy Sauer says Fly Exclusive believes it could hire as many as 240 people into new roles with this project, and that it will allow us to repatriate tens of millions of training dollars back to North Carolina. Sauer says it now employs more than 800. Founded in 2015, Fly Exclusive has become a powerhouse in the private jet space, telling Triangle Business Journal in March that it projects to hit $522 million in revenue this year. Last year, the company announced it intends to go public via a merger with a special purpose acquisition company, or SPAC, and a deal that values the company at $600 million. In Chatham County, more luxury homes are planned for Pittsboro. After first being proposed a few years ago, a large subdivision just north of Pittsboro could soon come to fruition. Corbett Landing, with 114 single-family homes spanning across nearly 200 acres off Old Graham Road, recently received final plat approval from the Pittsboro Planning Board, according to Ford Dupree, president of Rexford Group, the Chapel Hill developer for the project. The next step is to receive final approval from the Pittsboro Board of Commissioners. Dupree says the project is in the tall end and will be delivering lots by the end of the year, with the first homes being ready or close to delivery by next summer. Dupree declines to name a starting price for the homes. A website for the subdivision describes it as a beautiful neighborhood in tune with nature and with homes in the $800,000 range. In Granville County, industrial building sold for $7.45 million. A large industrial building in a growing county north of Durham sold for more than twice the value of when the previous owner bought it in 2021. The more than 12-acre property at 1176 Telecom Drive off Interstate 85 between Butner and Creedmoor in Granville County includes a roughly 74,000-square-foot industrial building. It sold earlier this month for $7.45 million, according to Granville County deed records. The buyer of the property is P&N Holdings Company of Elizabethtown. Ralph C. Carter, Jr., the person attached to the LLC, could not be reached for comment. The seller is Creedmoor Industrial LLC, a group tied to John Linderman, a former Triangle Area principal and managing director for commercial real estate firm Avison Young. Reporter Kaylee Thompson has an update on the real estate market in the area. In downtown Raleigh, building will be sold at auction. An office building in downtown Raleigh is up for auction at a fraction of its value. The 10-story building on Fayetteville Street is being auctioned online by 10X from November 13th to 15th, with a starting bid of $5.5 million. It is being sold by a lender, P&L Companies of Dallas, after the previous owner deeded the building back to the lender earlier this year, according to Wake County Property Records. The building is at 227 Fayetteville Street and houses the Pointer YMCA on the ground floor. The upcoming auction is a lender REO sale, which means that the property is being sold by a lender, but it isn't a foreclosure auction. P&L Companies did not respond to inquiries. Property records show LRC Properties of New York in late July deeded the building back to P&L in lieu of foreclosure, but the specific details around the transaction are unclear. The deed lists an excise tax of $28,000, indicating a sale price of $14 million. LRC Properties portfolio asset manager Justin Sacco says the company did not default on its loan. The mortgage was due, and we were unable to refinance with the existing lender, Sacco says. The building has an assessed value of $11.49 million, with a combined land and building value of about $15.45 million, meaning the minimum bid price is a little more than a third of its assessed value. Other tenants in the building include Ratio Architects, Vital Source, and Amity Macaron Cafe. There is a total of 101,466 square feet of Class A space. The building was built in 1965 for Wachovia Bank's regional headquarters. Commercial office buildings are taking a hit amid the shifting landscape in real estate as companies downsize or vacate their office spaces. A Morrisville office building was recently sold in a foreclosure auction. WeWork has started discussion with all of its landlords to renegotiate its leases after it announced in August it could face bankruptcy. In addition, the amount of sublease office space in the region hit an all-time high earlier this year. While that number has been decreasing, it's mostly due to master leases expiring and the sublease space being given back. That adds to the office vacancy rate, which hit 14.47% in the third quarter, according to Triangle Business Journal's space data. In North Raleigh, a $12.5 million estate takes luxury home market to next level. A desire for better functionality and creating a work of art has culminated in a $12.5 million home in North Raleigh. Brad and Ekaterina Holton are building their dream home based on sketches that Ekaterina made after working with three different architects who couldn't capture their vision for the home. Ekaterina says she was inspired by homes in Miami and Asheville. In addition, the couple wanted to improve functionality based on what wasn't working well in their current home off Six Forks Road. It's resulted in a luxurious six-bedroom, 17,000-square-foot home on 110 acres that the Holtons are working with designer Joseph Trojanowski and builder Sam St. Clair of St. Clair Construction Group to complete the home by May. The home also boasts modern touches such as recessed baseboards, flush doorways, floor-to-ceiling windows, and a koi pond. On the Highway 55 corridor in Cary, a restaurant is likely. A growing neighborhood in northwest Cary is set to get more retail options as the Highway 55 corridor continues to attract investments. Triangle Development Group, LLC, has received site plan approval for its mixed-use retail and office building at the Carpenter Village community between Morrisville Carpenter Road and Morrisville Parkway. The two-story building will be 14,700 square feet with about 7,350 square feet per floor. The first floor will be retail, while the second will be office space. Mithil Shaw, a real estate agent and owner of the LLC, says he is looking to bring in a restaurant and other food and beverage retailers for the offices. He wants to bring in medical and other services, but ultimately is going to see what fits well for the community's needs. Construction will take between 6 to 8 months, and Shaw said he anticipates breaking ground by the end of the year. This week's editorial is brought to us by Editor-in-Chief of Triangle Business Journal, Sugata Mukherjee. North Carolina needs to review rules tied to liquor sales. According to Carolina Demography, a nonprofit that keeps track of relevant demographics important for public policy, nearly 366,000 individuals moved to North Carolina in 2021, according to the U.S. Census Bureau's American Community Survey. Most of those individuals, 324,500, or 89% of all in-migrants, moved to North Carolina from another state. The top states in 2021 were Florida with 36,000, New York with 33,000, Virginia with 30,000, South Carolina with 23,000, and California with 23,000, five states accounting for more than a third of the in-migrants. Certainly, the Tar Heel State is different than many of the states in many ways, but one thing that hits most new residents is the way the state distributes and sells its liquor. While beer and wine can be sold in grocery and convenience stores, liquor sales are strictly regulated by the State Commissioned Alcohol Beverage Control Commission. North Carolina is one of the 17 states that still have this ABC-type structure. Of the top states where we are drawing people from, Virginia has a similar structure. So reporter Laura Brummett took a look at the workings of the ABC board. In short, North Carolina's ABC boards, the bigger ones, especially in Wake, Mecklenburg, and a few others, are getting bigger every year, running a business worth hundreds of millions of dollars. There are some 171 ABC boards in the state, in charge of more than 430 ABC stores that employ almost 3,000 people. In most cases, the board is chosen by local county commissioners. But, as Brummert noted, these boards exist with no term limits and limited oversight. So when commercial entities such as restaurants and bars complain about the local ABC boards playing favorites to some and thwarting others, ABC officials dismiss the notion, but they do not provide sufficient evidence to support a robust checks and balances system. Moreover, local ABC officials argue the word control plays an important role in managing sales of liquor, claiming open states have far more alcohol-related incidents such as DWIs. I'm not sure what statistics are being cited here, but according to the alcohol.org site, North Carolina's DWI rates are one of the worst in the nation. The state has a 4.1 DWI-related fatalities for every 100,000 people, easily among the top 25% among all states. It's another reason why perhaps North Carolina is due for a change. Let's review the past first. In 1993, the United States put an end to prohibition with a complete phase-out in North Carolina in 1937, once again allowing the import, transport, and sale of alcohol. The federal government also decided to give individual states control over their own liquor laws. Two types of control evolved. One gave complete control to local government, that's today's ABC system, while the other made it open for private businesses to sell beer, wine, and liquor. Prohibition ended some 90 years ago, so why are we tied to this archaic system? True, it generates revenue and profit. Last year, Wake County's ABC board earned $29 million, the second highest among all boards in the state. After distributions, about $2 million went to substance abuse or alcoholism programs. About $9 million went toward the county's general fund. So any new system needs to protect that flow of money. It's up to the state lawmakers to open the door and discuss whether changes are warranted. Just from Brummett's reporting, it looks like the system could use a sizable overhaul. Turning now to 52 Shades of Success, the Latino Influence. The 52 Shades of Success, the Latino Influence, explores the challenges and opportunities of individuals and businesses run by those in the Latin American community from all across the greater Raleigh-Durham metro area. This 52-week project will also dive into important trends and issues relating to the DEI sector. And these articles are written by Connie Gentry. When Edwin Argueta relocated his real estate office from Cary to Siler City in 2014, starter homes were selling for as little as $30,000 in Chatham County, and he was the only Spanish-speaking real estate broker in a market where the 2010 population numbered 63,500 and 13% of the population was Hispanic. Today, the population stands at 80,000, and the Hispanic population has grown comparably, now at 12%, but residential real estate has changed dramatically. It's a completely different market today. Entry homes that were selling between $30,000 and $50,000 in 2014 are now selling between $190,000 and $225,000. So that gives you an idea how far this market has come, and also the opportunity it has provided for people that make the decision to purchase back then. Argueta says many families purchased not only one but several properties that have turned into wealth for them. Since starting Windland Realty Group when he moved to North Carolina 10 years ago, Argueta's top priority has been to educate and empower his Spanish-speaking community. I found the education gap was so big in the Latino community that I began to teach homebuyer education seminars, he says. These are underserved areas in the population because decisions they make are related to the education they have and the different challenges they have in this country. If they aren't receiving information in the language that allows them to become informed, they're going to miss opportunities. Argueta fully appreciates the challenges of integrating into a culture without knowing the language. Born and raised in El Salvador, he moved to Seattle in 1998 to join his older brothers. Although he came with a degree in civil engineering, he spoke no English, which meant his first job was washing dishes at a restaurant. After 6 months attending free classes at the local community college, he had enough basic communication skills to participate in a mortgage broker apprenticeship. By the year 2000, he was working as a loan officer and within a couple of years opened his own mortgage brokerage firm in nearby Marysville. First, there was West Coast success. He and his wife Janelle, who is now in charge of payroll and accounts receivable at Winland, as well as the company's social coordinator, added a real estate division to their Washington firm, but lost everything when the market crashed in 2008. All of my net worth was in real estate, and the only thing I walked away with was my professional licenses, my marriage, and our daughter and son. I filed bankruptcy, and this time, rather than washing dishes, I became a restaurant server, picking up odd jobs, Argueta says. After visiting a sister in Hickory with road trips to Raleigh and Wilmington, he and Janelle uprooted their children, aged 11 and 9, and came to the Triangle, where they knew no one and had not a single business connection. Argueta hit the street, literally knocking on doors and handing out pamphlets that highlighted the local real estate market. Like anything, some doors were open and some were slammed in my face, but I spent that first year going to local Latino radio stations and answering any questions anybody wanted to ask about buying a home. He purchased a foreclosed home in Siler City and began doing YouTube videos about the market. The first-time homebuyer tax credit and teaching homebuyer workshops, eventually growing the business across 10 counties that span the Triangle and the Triad. Last year, Winland closed 155 real estate deals for a total volume in excess of $29 million. Although the spike in interest rates has slowed transactions this year, Winland had closed more than $21 million across 102 units by the end of September. In 2024, he's opening an office in Liberty, anticipating a surge in demand when Toyota begins production at its battery manufacturing facility in 2025, a $3.8 billion investment that will employ 2,100 people. Despite the economic growth and bullish outlook, Argueta has some fundamental concerns. The price of property in general has become unaffordable. There is limited inventory under $500,000, and the closer you get to Pittsburgh, the price point is much higher. And while the market has done well for sellers and for people who invested years ago, it's marginalized the first-time homebuyer, he says. The most disturbing disconnect is that the compensation paid to local workers has not kept pace with the cost of real estate. Where local government leaders have failed is in not recognizing that we are forgetting people, their jobs, their income, and can't afford them a house anymore, so we're creating a gap again, like when the market crashed in 2008. The solution he envisions is public-private partnership where local leaders and businesses create apprenticeship programs to train skilled labor for better paying jobs like electricians, plumbers, welders. Argueta remains realistically optimistic, applauding the state's first home advantage down payment assistance that provides up to $15,000 to eligible first-time homebuyers and those who have not owned their principal residence in the past 3 years. It's a very good program, but the other problem, the affordability factor, still remains. Just because down payment assistance is available, the price doesn't go down, he says. The North Carolina Home Finance Agency, NCHFA, enabled options for affordable mortgages, down payment assistance, and tax credits for thousands of homebuyers and homeowners in 2022, including almost 1,900 first-time homebuyers and veterans who received $8,000 in forgivable down payment assistance. Among the 2,550 buyers who utilized the NC Home Advantage mortgage, 407, or 16%, were Hispanic and Latino buyers. Of 1,890 buyers who used down payment assistance, 308, or roughly 16%, were Latino and Hispanic. And of the 650 who took advantage of the NC Home Advantage tax credit, 132, or 20%, were Latino or Hispanic, an NCHFA spokesperson says. Let's look at some of the big numbers. $3.4 million. That's how much has been recovered for payouts to victims of convicted Raleigh financier Stephen Peters, but that's far short of the more than $15 million tied to the Ponzi scheme, and the U.S. Attorney's Office notes that there are other expenses, such as mortgages, that have to be paid off before money is transferred to victims. $14.8 million. That's the size of a National Institute on Drug Abuse grant to Cessation Therapeutics to help develop a treatment for fentanyl overdose and fentanyl-related opioid use. $1.3 million, the amount an LLC tied to Chapel Hill's Wintergreen Hospitality spent on a roughly 2.3-acre lot in Smithfield for a planned Home 2 Suites by Hilton Hotel. $105.3 million, that's how much the novel Cary Apartments in Cary sold for to TA Realty, a Boston firm. Crescent Communities developed the apartments, which opened early this year. This week's quotables. I may not know the answer to something, but I know who to call. That's Joey Hopkins, who has a long tenure with the North Carolina Department of Transportation on being selected to lead DOT by Governor Roy Cooper. With approximately half of FastMed's clinics located in rural areas of our state with limited access to health care resources, this is an important investment in North Carolina. That's Blue Cross and Blue Shield of NC CEO Tunde Sotunde on the acquisition of all North Carolina locations of the urgent care company FastMed. The acquisition is expected to close in early 2024. We've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Hugh Bennett, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.